Lyndhurst interview with Mr. James H. Shanklin of Fleming County on July 26, 1988. The interviewer is Lynn David. This home that Mr. Shanklin, you have owned it, your family has owned your home how many years?
For here, since 1904. 84 years.
84 years, this home. But you say this home was built when?
It was built 1846 by Dr. George Lowry, L-O-W-R-Y. And he had, he had 12 children to begin with, and he owned quite a tract of land. He was a doctor of medicine, and I've understood from older people that he had quite a large collection of slaves. He died, incidentally, he died the year slaves were freed in 1865. And the gossiper says he died because of freed his slaves. But anyhow, he's one that got together, had 12 children, and he had over a thousand acres here. And of course, divided by 12, you couldn't very well do that, so the only thing you can do is put it up and sell it. Well, he put it up, sold it, and a man bought it, and he borrowed the money, and he just couldn't meet his payments. And finally, my father, there was a German immigrant family that bought it from them, and he was one of those hard workers, like so many of them were, especially the Germans at that time. He had a large family, too, but anyhow, they worked, and they bought it, and they paid for it. But his sons decided they wanted to get into the horse business, fine horses, you know. So they'd go out and buy horses for $2,000 or $3,000, which was an awful price in those days, you know, and take them to the fairs. Well, they'd win premiums, or what good to win premium over to Germantown or Yon or something like that if you got $2 for winning first and $1 for second, things like that. It was all a money loser, you know. And most of them, I understood that they liked their alcohol pretty well. But anyhow, when they got old, the old woman said, "This is the only place I ever had we could call home. Now it's gone." That's when she was signing the deed to my daddy.
What was the family's name?
Burke, B-U-R-K-E.
So your dad bought it in the early 1900s?
1904.
Yeah. So, you said there's 16 rooms in this house.
Yeah.
It's well built, isn't it?
Yes, it is. They went down, the old doctor went down with solid rock. That's the reason why it's never sank in. And before he put his foundation in, it's all on solid rock.
Mr. Shanklin, what was your father's name?
John.
Same as yours?
Yeah.
You were the junior then?
No, I'm James.
Oh, you're James. Yeah, I'm sorry.
He's John Thomas, I'm James Hopkins. Now, we had several generations out of the way. The first one that came in 1794, Shanklin, from Virginia, was James Shanklin. His son was John Hopkins. His son was James Hopkins. His son was John Thomas, who was my father. And I'm James Hopkins. And my son's John Hopkins.
You just keep skipping back and forth.
Yeah, just skipping back and forth.
Do you know much about the early Shanklins who settled in this area, outside of that they came from Virginia?
Yeah, well, no, originally, now they were from Scotland. Now, my wife and I were over in Scotland, I guess 2 years ago. You know what lawn bowling is? Do you ever see it? I never heard of it.
I've seen it on TV.
Have you?
Yeah.
Well, we lawn bowl at a senior citizen's home. That's where we live in Florida. It's a senior citizen's home. You have to be 50 or over to live, or an average age 72 or 3, I think. But anyhow, they lawn bowl, and it's a British game. And they come over here. They're in Britain. We've had a number of their teams over here visiting, and they always stop. Now, our place is fixed. We're the only place in Florida that has four lawns in which you can have you can have 32 games going at one time, you know, because it's eight to a lawn, eight players. eight rinks, which and six players, that's 48, and then four times that, so you see you can have a right smart place. And by the way, they're having the international competition down there in, I believe that's in December or January, this coming December. But anyhow, they invited us, a team of us, to come over. We invited us several times. So Opal is my wife. We went along with the team to Scotland. And we went up into Scotland. Of course, we landed in London. And they met us there. They have a fellow over there who arranges those trips, you know, itinerary for you folks. And we traveled up the east coast of Scotland of England till we got to Edinburgh, Scotland. Then we crossed over to Glasgow and came down the west side. So we got to see a lot of it. Well, I looked in Edinburgh and Glasgow both for Shanklin, and there's plenty of them there. Just James and John, just like our name. And a lot of them spell it S-H-A-N-K-L-A-N-D. There's a lot more of those than there was to spell it L-I-N, but there's both there. And there's lots of them in London, too. That, of course, London, as you know, is a great big city. But if I'd had time, I'd have had a James Shanklin, I would have called him and told him I was James Shanklin, too. Our schedule was so arranged that we just had to keep moving along. Because when we got to Scotland, they'd meet us with their bagpipes, you know, and escort us into their entertainment hall, and just as most hospitable people I ever saw. And I took along, I think it was 150 pounds or something. We supposed before we left pay for all expenses except one meal a day.
Yeah.
And I took along 150 pounds to buy Opal and me our evening meal. Well, they fed us so much we didn't spend $15 for food.
Now, the Shanklins originally came to the Mays Lick area, didn't they?
Yes. Yes, they did. I still have, the land that they, John Hopkins Shanklin, which is my great-grandfather, was the one that really accumulated more land than any of them. But his son, James, came in 1794, and he just had the one child. Now, he had two or three, according to our genealogy, who passed away in infancy, but one lived to maturity. Mm-hmm. But he came here in 1794, and that land that he bought, plus what his son bought, nearly all of it is still in his family.
And you're intact?
Yes.
About how many acres is that?
I expect it's 1,000 or more, something like that.
What was your dad like?
Well, of course, my dad was an old man when I was born. And he passed away in 1921. I was 19 years old. And he was a friendly type. And very popular. He was a representative of this county in the legislature. And that's the only time he ever ran for office. He said he didn't like working for the people too much. They made too many demands on him. So he finished out his one term down at Frankfort and never was ran again. But he is.
Did you all live in Frankfort while he?
No.
I assume he was a Democrat, right?
No, sir. He was.
He was.
That was a funny thing. In our family, you know, he was right there during the Civil War. He was born in 46, the year this house was built, and he had two brothers and his daddy. Well, he was the only one for the Union Army, Union side, and his father and his two brothers were all Confederates.
Did he ever explain why?
Well, yes. When he was a youngster, they lived over, there's an old road to come by, it's since closed, by the house where he lived. And he saw them driving slaves there, you know, and said he could hear them coming down the road a good while before they got there, cussing and carrying on, you know, and he's driving them like with buggy whips and everything. He said that certainly did make his heart feel bad for the slaves. And so he, and his grandfather was a slave owner, owned a good many slaves, of which I have some of his tax receipts, or did have, that listed the slaves, you know, they had to pay taxes on their slaves.
Didn't worry him that the family owned slaves, or just watching the...
Well, watching it, and then, of course, as I say, his grandfather owned them, and he knew them. He was born in 46, and slavery wasn't over till 65. So he was, I guess, he'd be 19 years old before they freed the slaves. And he saw plenty of them, and I've seen a lot of them in my time, but they were old men, and when I was just a little fella, you know. But that turned him against slavery. And he and his brother, Albert Shankton, who lived where Bill Robb lives now. Do you know William Robb?
Yes.
Well, he lives in the Shankton home there. Yes. That's Albert Shankton. Now, he was a brother of my father. But Albert Shankton was a representative from Mason County. And my father, John, was representative from Fleming County at the same time in Frankfort.
But with opposing views.
Opposing view, opposing tickets. One would vote for one, the other would vote against it. And we got along friendly. We had many, many family dinners between the two families after that, you know.
So the war didn't permanently split the family?
No, it didn't. No, sure it didn't. And all the rest of them called him Black Sheep, you know. Because he's the only one of them that ever been a Republican.
There's not too many of them around.
No,
in this part.
That's right.
Where did he serve in the Union forces? Did he ever say?
No, he didn't. Wasn't in the Union forces. He was.
Oh, he just a Northern sympathizer.
Northern sympathizer.
See,
he was just 46 from 61. He was 15 when the war broke out.
Yeah.
Wasn't quite older.
Whether he'd run away to serve? Or
no, he didn't. And none of them did, but they had very strong feelings, of course.
Did he ever tell you any stories about, as a boy, about things that he did or people he knew? Or?
Well, of course, he told me a lot of things about that. Now, he knew there were several folks naturally over at Mays Leak were worrying the Civil War, and he knew them personally. And they talked to him, but of course, most of them were on the Confederate side, naturally, you know. But if you go to Maysville now, it was a different thing. All the people all along the Ohio River, there was more men, I don't know whether you know or not, but there's more men served in the Union Army than the Confederate Army from Kentucky. And it's a southern state. But the reason is, the bigger places like Louisville, and Covington, Ashland, and Owensboro, Paducah, places like that, were right along the Ohio River, and nearly all of them were sympathetic with the North. Did most of them did work in the, well, most people live in Covington and Newport, and actually worked in Cincinnati, still do for that matter. So they had the Northern sympathy, but when you come down to Lexington and all the Breckenridges and people like that were prominent. Well, of course, Breckenridge's family, they had a general in each side, general in the Union Army, general in the Confederate Army. My father knew them both personally. He served, I think it's right that he served in the legislature with one of the Breckenridges, and they were, I believe one of them maybe might have been a vice president of the United States. That's going back even maybe back there, Henry Clay's time maybe or something like that. But
did your dad ever say what kind of men the Breckenridges were?
Oh, they were high type people, smart, all of them smart. Mm-hmm. Good many of them been governor of Kentucky in past history.
What was your mother's name?
My mother was Molly Calvin from Boyd County, Ashland, Kentucky. That's where she came from. Her brother was, I believe, was a sheriff for two or three terms up there in Boyd County. And
how'd your folks meet?
Well, you know, they had a tendency in those days that kind of families married within each other. My grandmother was a Pole, and the Pogue family, of course, some of them went to Cincinnati, like, of course, you've heard of H&S Pogue Store Company. Well, another part of them went to Boyd County, Ashland, Kentucky, and then some of them was, the Pogues in Sacramento and married several different times, even around right around Mays Lake. And so my father married a woman, a preacher's daughter from Flemingsburg first, and she passed away the first year trying to have her first and only baby. She and the baby both died.
What was her name, do you know?
Yes, she was Minnie Hendrick. He was her father was James P. Hendricks, Presbyterian preacher in Flemingsburg for many, many years. But his second wife, after she passed away, why, his mother was a Pogue. His mother was some of that same set. And his aunt married Bill Pogue. He's just intermarried so many different times, different ones. And so this Pogue family in Ashland said, well, we got a right nice lady out here, something right out here that's not married. She was, I guess, in her late 20s, supposed to be old maid in those days at that age. And so somebody got them together, and they seemed to suit each other, so they finally got married. They married in 1894, I believe it was. 93 it was, because my older sister was born in 94.
How many sisters and brothers did you have?
I haven't had no brothers. I had two sisters. Louise was my oldest, and she was named for the family side. She was Louise Calvin. My mother was a Calvin. My second sister was Virginia Pogue. They brought the Pogue back to her. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I was named for my grandfather, James Shanklin. My older sister's been dead for, 15 or 20 years, right smart while. But my other sister's still living. She's 3 years older than I. She's born in 99, so she'll be 89 this, I guess she's 89. I've got to call her up at the last day of July.
Yes, and that's coming up.
Yes, sir, it's coming up. That's
you're going to have to call her real quick.
Yes, that's right.
Where does she live?
She lives in Ashland.
Yeah. Did you know either set of your grandparents?
No.
When you were growing up?
Yeah, the female side, the grandmothers, but the grandfathers were both dead before I was born.
What do you remember about your grandmothers?
Well, now, my grandmother, Calvin, had lived in Ashland. She liked to play cards. She played casino all the time. Did you ever hear that game?
Uh-huh. I heard of it.
Well, she taught me how to play casino. And so she liked, I would like to play cards too, so I played casino with her a lot. And my grandmother and my father's side lived down, do you know where the Kinders, you know I am the Kinders down here?
I know the Kinders.
Yeah, well they live in the house where I was born, and that's where my family lived for a good while. But my father was one of five, so he got his land over on, he had first inherited some from his father. And then his mother had got a woman's dowry, I believe they call it, and he had so much money, so much land, and the home. And then when she passed away, he took his in land and didn't want the home because he's already here, you know. So the other four heirs put it up and sold it. And Mr. Starrett bought it first, but Mr. Kinder bought it last, and he's a nice fella.
Yes, he is.
Yes,
Earl Kinder's.
Yes, Earl Kinder's father that's still out with him. But they both are both nice, pleasant people. I'm awfully glad to have it because they take care of it. And nice, friendly, hospitable people. All of them are.
So, what do you remember about your grandmother Shanklin?
Well, that's my grandmother Shanklin that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That had that place there. My grandmother Calvin is, of course, she lived in Ashland, and she's been here to see us a time or two. But Gee, I don't know. I was pretty young when she passed away, probably, I'd have to guess at that, 10 or 12, 15, somewhere in that area.
Did your mother ever talk about growing up in Ashland, what it was like, or any stories she ever told you?
Well, she would tell something about it. Now, she went to school, Millersburg. You ever heard of Millersburg Female College?
Yeah.
Well, that's where she went to school. That was kind of unusual for a girl to go to school in those days, you know. But she went to school in the Millersburg Female College. And, she had two sisters and two brothers. One brother, George Calvin, was the sheriff of Boyd County, two or three different terms. And the other brother went to Texas, and he settled down there at Abilene, Texas. And I never saw him. I never saw any of his family, but I have talked to him. We were going to Phoenix, Arizona to spend the winter. That's before we started going to Florida. And one reason I went there is my wife has a niece that lived there, you know. And so they had rented us a nice home there. But anyhow, when we went going through Texas, we decided we would spend a night in Abilene, Texas, where they lived. So we knew the family name, and of course didn't know any of them, but we called them and got in touch with them.
That's good.
Yeah. And of course my uncle and his wife were dead. But we talked to some of the family. They wanted, said they would like for us to come out and talk with them or see them. And he said, well, we've got it on the way to Phoenix, and we've got to get on there because we're supposed to be there the next day.
Yeah.
And then we talked to them for, maybe half an hour on the telephone, right smart while. And they seemed to be very nice, very friendly. I invited them to come here, and they said, well, we would love to, but I never have seen them.
Were the Calvins landowners too, or?
Yes, originally. Yes, there was landowners to George Calvin. Of course, the women sold theirs. That's my mother's two sisters that lived there, and they lived in Ashland. And one of them worked for Uncle George in the sheriff's office. She was one of his bookkeepers for a long time. And the other married a Mr. Roberts. And he passed away before I think maybe I might have seen him when I was just a little fella, maybe 5 or 6 years old, something like that. Don't remember a thing about him. But he left her in fairly good financial circumstances, and so she lived off of that the rest of her life. Never did remarry, and she was a nice-looking woman. I don't know why she didn't, because she was certainly nice-looking and attractive and friendly. But I guess she must have had her sights too high or something like that.
You grew up out here in the country then?
Yeah, right here.
Yeah.
Moved here when I was 2 years old. And that was my home for the next 77 years.
Isn't that something?
Yes, it is. Not many people spend that much time in one place.
No. You noticed a lot of changes in those years in the area?
Of course. Every farm that joins me has changed hands since then, you know. Even though the people that own them, like Mr. Toll over here, he owned his till he died. He owned it before I was born, but Ann Browning, by the way, she lives down there in Florida, down there at Sarasota, which is just about 20 miles below us, you know. And every time she comes up, she's a wealthy girl. She married, her daddy was the president of the State National Bank down there. He was an officer in a big manufacturing concern, wealthy man. Only had one child, and Ann Browning, which is the Toll girl, she was an only child. And they inherited lots of money. But anyhow, she has a home in Pennsylvania and a home in Florida, she and her husband. And every time she goes up, back and forth, she always stops to see us. Generally, we'll have a meal together.
Oh, that's nice.
And she's a little older than our children, and she used to love to, my wife said, come over here, because she could boss them, you know. She's about 2 or 3 years older, and they would do what she wanted, what she'd tell them to do. But she's an attractive, nice, attractive lady. Cunning, Harold Cunning is who she married, Harold Cunning Jr. His father was Harold Cunning Sr. And he was quite well to do. He was a graduate, I believe it's Yale or Harvard, one, but I think Yale. And he was a Presbyterian, and any time that the preacher was out there, he would give a sermon. And my sister went to hear him and said, well, we'd rather hear him any time than the preacher. Because he was a good talker. That's one thing, of course, helped him to get to be the president of the big company he was in. And he was an attractive fellow, just as smart as he could be, and very attractive. He came here with, of course, all that money. Well, all the banks naturally was hunting him, and his business naturally would be. And Mr. Toll was the president, not the president, he was the director of the Bank of Maeslick and the Fleming County Farmers Bank, the largest stockholder in both of them. He was a wealthy man, too.
Did you all do much business in Maeslick when you were a little boy? Did you go there very much?
No, we didn't. You see, we're over the line in Fleming County, and I went to school this direction. Well, John's house, the house right on the corner where you turn there at 888 is where my son lived. Well, just that, down there, quarter of a mile is the line, you know.
Yeah.
So my children went to school in Fleming County, and I did. And we went to church over here to the Lyonsville Presbyterian Church. My father went to church in Maeslick there till he moved here.
Which church did he attend?
The Presbyterian.
And the Presbyterian Church.
And we just never saw much. I didn't know any of the young people over around Maeslick until I got to be a grown man. And then I would see the Clarks and the Finches and people like that, you know, different places. We would see them, maybe they were all farmers. We'd see them at the stockyards. And naturally, they were good-sized landowners also, you know. And we would maybe be sitting close together, and we would discuss farm topics.
Did your father have men who farmed the land for him, or did he do the farming himself?
Well, he was a manager. Now, you see, when he was a young fellow, he had lots of slaves, you know. He didn't do any of the work. But his father managed it. And we've had black people living on our farm. I've got almost 500 acres here. Of course, I didn't get that from him. I just got 100 acres from him. But we had black people living on our place since way back. Slavery, you know, until Lyndon Johnson decided to, everybody needed a new home, and so we had, I think, about 25 of them, and he built them all a new house in Lexington, and most of them went to Lexington, some of them went to Cincinnati. But anyhow, they'd go in those, live in those new modern brick homes. I've been in some of them, and they had, of course, electric heat. Electric air conditioning, bathroom, running water, nice place, and if they didn't have the money to pay the rent on it, they just raised their welfare till it did pay it, you know. And they wouldn't let them work for us now. We would like to have given them, I would have been glad to have given them, $6 or $8, $10 an hour to come back here and help harvest their tobacco crop, because they knew all about it, you know. And we would have to depend on, and still do, people up here in the mountain section who comes down here, and many of them don't really know how to really handle the tobacco, you know. But
Who were some of the black families that were here before the war and stayed on? What were their names?
Well, Queens and Johnson, and Will Queen and Dave Johnson and Horace Nelson and just different ones. And blacks had lived, and most of them lived at Maisley, Mose Black. Of course, that's where the most of them went first, you know, after the slaves were free. Well, we had a few. Well, we had an old log house that my grandfather built for one of his slaves. His name was Mose Lowry. Now, I have always thought maybe that Dr. Lowry too old. That's on the farm that I have down in Mason County. It's where Kendall is, only I've still got the land there, 130 acres there of the regiment.
So did your family then take care of Mr. Lowry?
Oh, yeah. They stayed and took care of him. They'd give him a garden, a place to raise a garden, you know.
Yeah.
Him and his wife stayed there till they died. And they had some children that would come in and kind of see about them once in a while. But they didn't get very, very good medical attention in those days, you know, especially black people, you know. But they lived to be a good while. We still have, they dug a spring right close to his house. And we still call it the Lowry Spring, you know. It still works, still there, still running water.
They're doing good.
Yeah. And I have plowed that spot up where the house was, and you can see, like any old house, see little pieces, broken pieces of dishes, you know, like blue or green or whatever color it happened to be, that had been discarded, thrown out in the yard or the garden or something like that.
Did you ever hear any of the former slaves talk about slavery times or slavery?
Well, yes. Yes, a little. Now, our farmer governor, Happy Chandler, you probably know, got in trouble over making they call it a derogatory remark about the black people, you know. Said the reason they were such good athletes is that back during slavery, they always picked out the biggest men to bring to the women, you know. So they would have the idea when they is to have just a good black, big black boy that they could sell. A big one would bring more than a little one, you know. Well, I've heard some of those old ones say they didn't hit the court the girls at all because the big bucks, as they call them, got all the girls. And I've heard several of them say that, talk that away. But the ones I heard talk never seemed to talk real bitter about it. Apparently, they had owners or masters who treated them fairly decent. Some of them, most of them did. They were some of them. Even from my understanding, Dr. Lowry built his house pretty mean, awfully mean to his blacks.
Was he?
Now, I've heard that, yeah.
Well, you said a lot of them after the war went to Maze Lick. Why did they go to Maze Lick, or where did they go?
Well, of course, they was freed, and they wanted to get out from under their bosses, you know, and they went anywhere they could find some shelter. And of course, even those days, there was more empty houses in town than there was out in the country. And most of the farmers, you see, didn't want them because they wouldn't do what they told them to. Before, they had to do what they were told to do, you know. And so they when they went to town, nearly all of them had to depend on farm labor for what little money they could get a hold of. But still, they couldn't demand that they do like they did when they were slaves. And they just, of course, an awful lot of them went to the cities like Cincinnati.
Well, that's pretty hard on your father. When slavery ended and suddenly the labor supply was iffy?
Well, of course, it's like I said, we had blacks live on our place clear up to Lyndon Johnson, sent them all to the city. So he always had plenty of help. But then I did. Now that was one thing that, about this big house, you know, with the big, great big yards. You can see it's a big yard here. Well, I never had any trouble during my lifetime to get somebody to mow the yard because there was always plenty of little boys that would want to make a quarter, 50 cents, whatever I could pay them, you know, to get out here and run the mower. And same way with the women. And my wife would get just any amount of those girls come here and clean, you know. And she'd pay them whatever she could afford to pay, which wouldn't be very much, especially in the 30s.
No. How did the 30s affect your family?
Well, it affected me adversely. I started out, my father passed away, and of course, he left my mother with his property during her lifetime. He had 300 acres. And I was the only boy in the family. And I was 19 when he passed away, so I was the one supposedly to take care of the farm. The women, both the girls, had already graduated from college, and they were teaching school. And so I tried to, my father had his land all paid for, but he decided, he died in 21, in 1920, he wanted a bathroom, so he built two or three rooms back in the back part of the house and put them in a bathroom. And we had to have a Delco plant. I don't know whether you ever heard of them or not, but you made your own electricity. That's before we had the electric lines running all over the country, you know. And he was one of the, he and Dick Owens over here, the only two people in this end of the county that had their own electricity back in those days. And so he just started. We got a four-room basement under here, you know.
Uh-huh.
And they had great big batteries. And you start up that engine to charge those batteries up, and everybody had to be ultra conservative about the use of electricity, because if you use too much, you'd get dim, you know. Have to go down and start up the motor. But I started out here. My father had everything paid for, but he spent about all his money, surplus money, on that building back here and the bathroom and so forth. And then I started out to try to run the farm. Well, I wanted to own some cattle, and of course I wanted to, in a little while, I wanted a tractor. I'd gotten tired of the horses. That's where I started farming, with horses. And so the only way I could get was borrow some money.
Yeah.
And then I got caught in the crash, the 30s. And one year I worked like a dog here all year, and when it got done, I lost $8,000. You just can't hardly dream of that, but that's the rate. Because it got included, see, the taxes. They had sold bonds for schools and things like that. Well, they had to be, interest had to be met on those.
Yeah.
The county and the school districts, they collected their taxes, so we had to pay them, even if we borrowed the money, and that's what we had to do.
That was pretty rough.
Was rough. It was so. Tobacco, 6, 7, 8 cents a pound, something like that. It was just very cheap.
You remember the tobacco wars, the Knight Riders?
No, that was before my day. I've heard my father talk about them.
What'd your dad say about them?
Well, they came through, they rode around through the country. They didn't come to him. Actually, my grandfather didn't believe in raising tobacco. He never would let any tobacco be raised on his land. Now, he was John Hopkins Shanklin. When he got so much land, he had two children. My grandfather was one of them, and he inherited it. Like 600 or 700 acres, pretty good sized tract of land. And he never would raise any tobacco at all, never allowed him to raise any of his, be raised on his farm. Well, he died in 1887, and he had five children, and they built five barns the next year. They had a great big woods on the farm. They got them a sawmill, and all the children wanted a tobacco barn, and they all built them one.
I take it they didn't agree with their father then.
Oh, no, no.
Why wouldn't he, didn't he want to raise
him? Well, he was a very religious man, and he just thought it was a sin.
But the kids didn't.
No.
they wanted to sin all over, huh?
Yeah, they inherited the land, but not his religion.
Yeah.
And he was, he used to have two or three steeples around the old Presbyterian church right in Major League, and they called one of them Hop Shanklin. That was his nickname, you know. He was always, he led the music. He and his two sons and two daughters just led the music at that Presbyterian church till they all got beyond it, moved away and so forth. My father was one that couldn't sing a tune, and none of his children carried tunes.
That died out.
But anyhow, Uncle Albert and Uncle Willie both had good voices, and the two girls both sang. They sang in the church all the time. And he was there every Sunday. Again, difference, I've heard Aunt Sally say that she lived longer than any of them. They've driven to church many times, and they had to put a little thing with heat in it in the bottom of the buggy to keep your feet from freezing, you know.
Quite a distance.
Oh, yes.
Out here to the Presbyterian Church.
That's right, and especially to drive a horse and buggy, and that's the only transportation they had.
But anyway, so you all, the tobacco prices were down, and your dad was, did he go with the warehouses then, or did he not grow it there?
Oh, my dad grew it all, except one year they cut it out in 1908. Of course, I was only 6 years old, about all I know about hearsay. But he grew it every year, and he's got a good many German immigrant families, like the Peffers, the Schumachers, and Sowers, Tammies. He all those raised tobacco on his place, and two, three generations of them. And a lot of them are wearing Maize Lake now. Yeah. I mean, the descendants of them, of course, many of them have moved to Maysville and elsewhere.
Did you ever hear a story of a black man who was lynched outside of Maize Lake?
Grain Smith.
Was that who it was?
That's who it was. And I've got Grain Smith worked for my daddy, and I was looking right through my records. I've got checks right here. I can show you right now that he gave to Grain Smith when he's working here.
What happened? What was that all about?
That was over here at Johnson's Junction. That's a little place over here where the railroad stopped. And there was a man, I don't know his name, knew him. Anyhow, he left here and went to Lexington. But anyhow, he had a daughter, and his wife died when she was a little thing, maybe 6, 8, 10 years old. And he had an old black man stay with him, and he raised her. Well, she became pregnant, and they said it was by him, you know. Well, he left and went to Cincinnati or Columbus or somewhere, some of the cities. But anyhow, they got out a warrant for him, and the sheriff went up to Paris to meet him, to bring him back to Fleming, who's in Fleming County, bring him back to Flemingsburg. And everybody says he was in cahoots, as they most of them say, with the mob crowd.
And Grant Smith was?
No, this sheriff.
Oh, the sheriff, okay.
He had Grant Smith, you see. And so they took him, nigger, away from him at Paris and brought him down here and held him, hanged him over here. Well, it's between Maize Lake and Carlisle on 68. I saw him, used to see the tree. I've seen the tree many times where he was hanged. And I don't remember that of him working here, but I've had other older black people talk to us about Grant Smith. Said, well, you ought to know him. He worked to your daddy for a good many years. But he wasn't working for him, of course, when this happened. He'd gone to work for this man down here at Flemingsburg Junction.
Who was the man? It's awful to do that to you, isn't it?
Well, it is. It's like I told you in the beginning, I'm getting old, my memory's terrible.
I think your memory's fantastic. Was the girl pregnant by him then, or was it just...
Gossip has it, and that's all, that she had a black baby and it died. Now, that's just gossip.
Yeah.
Whether it happened or not, I don't know. But anyhow, I do know that they hanged him. And, I've seen pictures of him hanging from that limb. There's several people around over here at Flemingsburg Junction that was supposed to have been in that mob that hanged him, and nearly all of them, every one of them, died a tragic life. Now that's...
Did the law do anything about any of the men that were present when he was
hung? No. They didn't do anything at all. They said they couldn't find out who it was, and then they were able to try. Because at that time, he's just a nigger, you know. Just like a dog or something like that.
So what year did that occur? It's early 1900s, but...
I can remember it in 10, 15, somewhere along in there. I was just a little fella, but I certainly remember it.
Remember how you felt about it when it happened? Or?
Well, yeah, of course I felt bad about it, but gossip was, he raped that girl, but I don't guess he did. Probably with taking care of her, and dressing her and everything like that, but it just didn't work out too well. Which probably wouldn't if they did that now, as far as that's concerned.
Well, I had heard that it had happened, but you're the first one that ever told me, what exactly.
Yeah.
I never was too sure.
I can tell you the sheriff's name and had him, and I can tell you several of them that were reported in the mob, but the sheriff, of course, is George Powell, lived over at Wisely.
Well, I've had some names, people have said that they were there as children.
Yeah.
It was too late, the time I started doing this to talk to anybody who was actually there.
Well, of course, most anybody there wouldn't tell you. But I've understood that, I've heard naturally through the years a lot of people that was in that mob that hanged him, and most of them, one fella stabbed his daddy to death, and then finally shot himself, killed himself. Another one spent a good many years in the penitentiary. Most of them had some sort of tragedy in their late lives, and everybody said, he was one of the mob that hanged Grant Smith. That would be gossip. Nobody actually. All the ones that knew didn't say anything about it,
Was the Klan active in Kentucky in the early 30s or 20s and 30s?
Not much. I don't think so. I don't think this was the Klan necessarily that hanged James Smith.
No, I didn't mean to infer that it was.
But it never was strong here like it was, say, down in Mississippi and Georgia and place the Carolinas. And still is down there if it wasn't for the federal government. I'm telling what they would do. They do enough as it is,
Well, the blacks and whites in Mason Fleming County seem to have made their peace with each other, didn't they? This Grant Smith thing was something different.
Well, yes, that was an unusual case.
But that was unusual, wasn't it, for this era?
Oh, yes, unusual. Oh, yeah, they've always, I never heard any friction. I never even got into fist fights. Maybe some of them did a drink or two too many once in a while, but never was carried along any further, not any groups of blacks and whites ever battled. I ever heard anything about around here.
What was Prohibition like around here? Did it bother anybody?
Well, it bothered the fellas that liked his drinks, I reckon.
did we have much illegal?
Oh, plenty of it, yes. Yes, the bootleg whiskey, they had no bootleggers right around here, but They mostly go back up here in the mountains, around Moorhead in that area, you know, to get to find the bootleggers. I've always understood you could go to Mass and find some bootleg whiskey anytime you wanted to, if you had the money to buy it, really. And I guess that anybody wanted whiskey could buy that moonshine, they called it, which, of course, wasn't very good. That's what the people that drank gone. Oh, I drank a little as I was a teenager, you know, trying to be one of the boys or something, but it never did appeal to me. And I'd go right now to any kind of meeting and they have their champagne or whatnot, you know. I just tell them, give me a cocoa or something like that. It isn't that so much against it. Marley, that is, far as they're concerned, but they just don't like the taste of it, never did.
Well, so Prohibition was easy on
well,
you.
Well, that's right. That's right. But as a youngster, teenager, I tried to do, I did a little once in a while. I didn't buy much myself, but some of the boys would have it, and I'd take a nip of them, but not very much. I never did like a taste of it. Didn't like it then, I still don't.
Where'd you meet your wife?
Well, she's a Fleming County girl. I met her in Flemingsburg.
Did y'all go to school together?
No, I went to school in Lisville, and she went to school in Flemingsburg.
What was your wife's maiden name?
Day, D-A-Y.
Opal Day,
Opal
right.
Day. Now, they was a prolific tribe. They had, her father was one of eight or ten. She was one of eight herself. She's the youngest one of eight.
My goodness. You got a whole setup when you married her,
that's
didn't
right.
you?
Somebody asked me if my wife inherited anything. I said, yes, plenty of kinfolk. But anyhow, we looked in the telephone directory in London. And in Glasgow, too, well, there's two or three pages of them. I said they were prolific over here as well as they were over in the States.
So her family originally came from Scotland? Or
no, they came from England.
They came from England.
Yeah, the River Dee, is, as they claim, that's where they came from, and they just changed it from D-E-E to D-A-Y.
So, well, now, if you both went to school in different places, where did you meet them?
Well, naturally, Flemingsburg was the county seat, and they had so many more pretty girls than we'd have around Neptune or Lisle, you know. So, us boys, we'd go over to Flemingsburg Saturdays to see if we could find some of those pretty-looking girls, you know.
You found one.
I found one, yeah.
Well, how old were you when you got married?
I was 22, and she was 21. We married in 1924, and so we've been married 64 years. It'll be 64 years, I guess, in November.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yes, yeah, that's right.
Were you married in Flemingsburg then, or?
Yes, married at her home, in Flemingsburg. A Methodist preacher. She was reared a Methodist. Well, my grandmother, my mother, and one daughter-in-law were all reared in the Methodist Church, so I said, I have a pretty good tie to the Methodist Church.
Sure.
But it was just from the masculine side, they were all raised as Presbyterians, my father, and for several generations of them. Because when I was in Scotland, you know, I asked two other people, I said, what is the dominant religion? They said, oh, Presbyterians. I said, well, Presbyterians, anything.
How many children then have you all had?
Two sons.
And one of them's John?
One of them's James Day. He's a doctor in Lowell, doctor of medicine. And by the way, he's in Switzerland now. He travels around a lot. His family's, his last son graduated from college last year, but he's always, well, the doctors, of course, as you know, have been rather making that good living in the past for several years now. He bought a big home in Louisville. It's got pillars in front, kind of like this one here. I put those pillars up there myself about 30 years ago after after my mother passed away.
So there originally were no pillars on the front of the house?
No, it had a porch, but it, well, how come they built it? The porch, just, it was just wooden floor, you know, and the family vent, but I'd have to, I'd put two or three different sets of floors in that in my time.
Just got tired of doing it.
And got tired of doing it. And my neighbor down here, Mr. Ross, he inherited the money from an uncle, went down to Texas and got into the oil business, and he left him in good shape. Well, he remodeled his house, and he's the one that bought those four pillars that's at your front now and put them on his house. And I went down to his house called Far on one Sunday morning, I think it was Sunday. I went down to try to help him move out, and did help him move out the furniture and so forth. And we put a great big rope on those posts, and all 15 or 20 men got a hold of it and pulled them out, you know, pulled all four of those posts out. Well, I never once thought about it ever being interested in them ourselves, you know. And so Helen Gillespie Ross, we was getting ready to build the porch. They had built a new home, and they didn't build the old type one, you know. They mm-hmm. built a new modern one. And its porch didn't have it. I mean, their front porch just had a floor there, no ceiling over it at all. And they had these posts of back there in the barn. And her brother was an architect that had moved to Cincinnati. And she said, well, if y'all are going to build a porch, why don't you buy these pillars from Johnson, her husband? And Hopel said, oh, I don't think we take those. And Helen said, well, I'll tell you what, we'll just give them to you if you'll take them, use them.
Well, that's great.
And so that sounded good, you know.
Yeah.
So we went down there and got them, and then I had her brother come here and design a porch, you know, paid him naturally because of the family tie. And he designed the porch and supervised the building. Of course, he wasn't here, but he laid, drew all the plans and so on. And the Flemingsburg Lumber Company built it, and he would stop by. He'd come see her periodically, say three or four times a year. During the process of the building, he'd drop by and see that they were doing it according to the plans that he drew. And so that's where I got those buildings. They're all solid redwood.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes they are.
You know, talking about this house, and we talked earlier when I walked in, because it's such a gorgeous house, and you said it's got 16 rooms. Did you ever hear any ghost stories connected with this old house? A lot of them there are, I wonder.
Well, I never, no, sir, I never have heard any ghost stories about it.
Did any of the blacks on the property ever tell you any old ghost stories as a kid?
Oh, well, of course, they would tell you a lot of different tales, maybe some of them true, some of them, like any story, you started out and they always added to it. But they would talk about different things. And I don't remember any of them being much like ghost stories.
Remember any of the stories that you used to hear as a kid?
What did you say?
I said, do you remember any of the stories you used to hear?
Of course, I kind of get those. What I used to hear with some that I have heard directly from the blacks, as I say, we've had them here for many years until fairly recently. And the old ones, we hardly ever got rid of any of the old ones. They go out finally. One with us was with us for well over 50 years, I think 56 or 57 years, but he lived long enough for Social Security.
Who was that?
Dave Johnson. And he lived over a little town, Nepton, over here. And my daddy, when he got old and couldn't do much work, he bought a little house over there and gave it to him, deeded it to him.
Well, how nice.
And so he had it then. He had it until he died, and his wife had it until she died. And it's still standing, still in use.
What was his wife's name?
Pearl. She was Pearl Wilson. they knew their mothers, but wasn't too sure about their daddies, you know. She called herself Gray, Pearl Gray.
Think somebody just came
home. Yeah, I think that must be my son or daughter-in-law.
Well, I really appreciate you talking to me today. And see, for somebody who didn't know anything, you knew a lot.
Well,
I've really enjoyed it. Where do you live in Florida? What's your home?
Sun City Center.
Yeah, I don't know if I get that way. I'll stop by and I'll
Well,
say
if you go to Tampa, it's in the same county. Tampa's in Hillsborough County. And this is in the same county.
Well, I do appreciate you taking the time this afternoon
and
sharing this with us.
I'm glad to do it, but I could have told you more 20 years ago because my memory was so much better.
Well, I sort of crept up on you, too. You didn't know I was coming, but loved it. You know, if you think of something, you write it down, jot it down for me so we can have it. It's been delightful. I'm glad I got to meet. I'm glad I met Molly so I could meet you.
Well, thank you. That was my, I think Molly's mother that might come in there.
I'll have to check.